can open your Bibles to Luke chapter 13. Every year when I get up to preach on Mother's Day, it occurs to me, and I wrestle with the fact that this can be a tricky time to preach. And I always say something along these lines that, I know that I could stand up here and speak as if I'm assuming that we all have amazing relationships with our amazing mothers. But at the same time, I know that there are some of us that have very complex and messy and difficult relationships with our mothers. But the truth is that almost every one of us has some combination of those things. It's not one or the other. It's a mixed bag. And what we want to focus on today, as the video that we watched earlier, which I loved, talks about this world needing to know who God is. They need a picture of God. And there are things about our mothers that show us who God is. You know, through the years that I've been here, I've talked a lot about my beautiful mother, Julia Mathis. And this year, I want to share a little bit about somebody else. I want to introduce you to my grandma Mathis, my dad's mom. That picture's kind of stretched out a little bit, this picture was taken around her 97th birthday. She was born in 1892 and died in 1996, just about 8 weeks shy of her 104th birthday. And she was an amazing woman. She lived long enough to see quite a few changes in this world between 1892 and 1996. And she was an amazing person to talk to. She loved God and she loved people. She loved to read the Bible and had a good bit of it memorized. Toward the end of her life, she was in the hospital and she had people from the family would go and sit with her. We just wanted always somebody to be there with her. And my brother Tom was with her one day and she had been sleeping, or so he thought, and she opened her eyes and said, "Tom, can you get the Bible and read Colossians chapter 3 to me?" He said, "Sure." So he got it and he opened it up and he read that chapter and she said, "Okay, yeah, good, thank you." And he asked her about it, and what she was doing was laying there in bed, going through the Bible chapter by chapter and thinking about what each chapter was about. But she got to Colossians 3, and she couldn't quite remember what that was. So she had him read it, and she was like, "Oh yeah, that's right, yeah, okay." And then she went on with her meditation. She was good and strong and kind and spiritual and made a difference in countless lives, including one of her daughters-in-law, my mom. And they had such an amazing relationship. But she bore 10 children and had lots of grandchildren and even more great-grandchildren. And that number's still counting. You know, I lost count, but up until the time of her death, she knew how many they were, and she knew all their names. And she would pray for all of us every day. I remember times going to her and, you know, and talking, but I didn't have the relationship with her where grandma would come and get us and go buy ice cream. You know, I knew her. She was old when I got to know her. She was 68 when I was born. My earliest memories are of her in her mid to late 70s. And but she looked pretty much like this on her 97th birthday. She looked pretty much like that through her 70s and 80s and 90s. You know, I love that dress. That's something else, isn't it? That's like, is that like 70s style? Well, she was still rocking it in the late 80s and wearing it well. But But you take that same picture all through the years that I knew her, all you had to do was take the same picture and just shrink it a little bit each year. And she looked exactly the same. But one of my favorite pictures of her that I didn't bring today, I've got to find it. I think one of my siblings has it, was a picture of her as a young woman standing out in a field. Because I always knew her as a small person. But that picture of her standing out in the field, she looked stout. Not big, strong. And it was, you know, because I knew her like this, and she was like this. And I was like, whoa, I love that picture. And one of my favorite stories of her is from those early days, and actually is for a story about her working out in the field, on the farm, with her husband and kids. And something that was going on, my granddad, Grandpa Mathis, he died when I was 11 months old, so I never knew him, but apparently he could be a pretty harsh man, and he was giving the boys a hard time, and Grandma felt like that he was being too hard on the boys. So she would say, you know, Walt, you need to settle down. They're just boys, you know. Ease up on them a little bit. And he would settle down for a little bit, but then something would happen, and he would start, like, railing on him again. And she had told him a few times, and finally she said, listen, if you don't stop talking to them like that, I'm going to make you eat dirt. And he simmered down, but he did it again, and she reached down and picked up a clod of dirt and ran from behind, jumped on his back, and smeared that clod of dirt in his face. And he was a big man, and she was short and stout, but she jumped all the way up on him, and he was like going around like that, and they ended up rolling across the furrows, kind of wrestling with her, rubbing a clod of dirt in his face, and they ended up both of them just laughing. And it's a great story, you know, to hear about your grandma doing that. But it also reshaped some of my thinking, because I realized when I heard that story, she was born in 1892, she got married in 1911. And so I had a picture in my mind of what were marriages like, what were kind of the typical marriage roles like. And I had this picture of the dominant man and the quiet retiring woman, you know, from the early 1900s, because I've read that. But it's one thing to read something in a book, and it's another thing to know somebody and to hear their story. And I'm saying, it, you know, when it comes to my grandma, that stereotypical picture of marriage roles, it just wasn't like that. And so you can hear something and you can read something or you can have one way of thinking, but when you know somebody in flesh and blood and you see behavior, that helps it really to sink in to say, well, maybe that view that I got from somewhere wasn't always accurate. Something that I'll always remember about Grandma is that with all the dozens, literally, of grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-greats, she knew all of our names, and she prayed for all of us every day. I remember her looking in my eyes and saying, I pray for you every day. I pray that you will always love God with all your heart and that you'll keep yourself pure and unspotted from the world. That's what she prayed for me. She wasn't the kind of grandma that came and picked me up and took me to the park or went to get ice cream. We would go and visit, and it was usually, you know, there were a lot of us with having nine kids, but when we'd go to see grandma, it was more sitting around, and she would be there, you know, crocheting, like, She was amazing. She crocheted with just tiny little thread, and basically it was handmade lace, and it would be little doilies or sometimes a tablecloth big enough for a banquet table, and it was all this intricate lace, and she would be sitting there and just talking, and her hands were just going, and she talked about God, and she talked about family. That was her thing. But we knew we were on our hearts. And here's what I knew about Grandma. She prayed for me every day. And what she always told me, and what I remember at 55, is that every day of her life, my grandma prayed that I would always love God with all my heart, and that I would keep myself pure and unspotted from the world. And from her, in my relationship with her, one thing I learned is there's nothing more powerful that you can do for somebody than to pray for them. Romans 8:34 says, "Who is he that condemns? Christ Jesus, who died, more than that, who was raised to life, is at the right hand of God and is also interceding for us." He's praying for us every day. Hebrews 7:24. "Because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them." When Steve preached a few weeks ago, he read both of these passages, and to me, it was like Jesus saying to me, "You want to know who I am? I'm just like your grandmother. I'm praying for you every day. And I can't pretend to know all the things that Jesus prays for me or you, but I bet he prays that we would always love God with all our hearts, and that we keep ourselves pure and unspotted from the world. God's hard to understand, and there's a part of God that will always be mysterious, but here's something that helps for me. Remember your grandma? That's what I'm like. So the idea that we're focusing on today is that when we think about the best in our mothers and our grandmothers, we're really thinking about the character of God. Because this world needs a picture of God. And something that we need to wrap our brains around is that, you know, we can read things about God. We can be taught things about God, but one of the most powerful things that God has given us is people in our lives that live out in flesh and blood what godliness is like. And this sermon is, you know, one of the things that's difficult sometimes on Mother's Day, the things that you talk about, a lot of really good-hearted mothers, the way they internalize it is he's talking about all the things that I need to do if I really want to be a good mother. And actually what I'm saying is the opposite. I'm saying that if we think about the best in all of our mothers, then we are a lot further along in understanding who God is. You know, the Bible gives us images and snapshots, if you will, that help us comprehend different aspects of God's character. Some of them are masculine. Well, most of them are masculine, but some of them are feminine, and some of them even specifically have to do with motherhood. In Luke 13:34, Jesus says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you are not willing." You know, Jesus could have looked at Jerusalem and made some kind of theological statement. Like, I love you with the love of the triune God, who is an eternal relationship of self-giving love. And we think, oh yeah, I got to chew on that one. But he didn't say that. He said, I'm like a mother hen. And everybody says, oh yeah, I get that. If you've seen a mother hen gathering her chicks under her wings, and you go, oh yeah, got it. Speaking to an agricultural society, everybody knew what that was. How many of you have chickens? Nobody. I'm not even raising my hand. None of us have chickens. You've seen chickens, right? You haven't just eaten them. They were once alive. But if you're around chickens, you know what that looks like. And so rather than making some big theological statement, Jesus said, you know, when I look at Jerusalem, and I have this fierce kind of protected love, and my heart breaks because God has sent God's best. I've sent prophets to you to try to turn your hearts to God. You've stoned the prophets. You've killed those sent to you. You're rejecting God's best for yourself. And my response is not anger and condemnation. My response is, I want to gather you in just like a mother hen gathers her chicks under her wings. That's who I am. That's who I am to you. As we try to envision God, many of us struggle between extremes. On the one hand, many of us were given a picture of God, the angry lawgiver. In relation to God, we're basically always in trouble. In relation to God, we're never quite enough. If we take decades and decades of sermons that we've heard in church and can kind of distill them down into two words, it would be this: try harder. It's what Dallas Willard calls the gospel of sin management. That's what it's about. Stop sinning. And then on the other extreme, we can have a picture of God that says, it doesn't matter how you live. God's loving. What Dietrich Bonhoeffer calls cheap grace. So you've got this extreme of the gospel of sin management and the other extreme of cheap grace, and neither are a picture of God. And we wrestle with it. And Jesus says, I could give you a theological formula if I want to, but really what I want to give you is a picture. It's a portrait. And in this case, it's a mother hen. And we've already read several other passages. It's a mama bear. It's a mother with a baby at her breast. So you think I'm going to forget you? Can a mother forget the child nursing at her breast? Neither will I. She might forget, right? Even if she did, I won't. Hosea, over and over again in Isaiah, some of those verses we've already read today. Instead of giving us a formula, God pointed us to a relationship and said, this is a picture. And rather than thinking in terms of extremes of God the angry lawgiver or God the permissive grandfather who's uninvolved and doesn't really care how you live, really the way to think about it is Jesus says, it's like, you know, my heart breaks for you because I want God's best for you. In fact, God has sent you prophets. He sent you people to speak my best into your life, and you're rejecting it. But listen, I want to tell you how you can live. I want to give you a different vision of what life can actually be like. And then when you miss the mark, what I want to do is gather you under my wings. I want to pull you in. I'm like a mother whose daughter or son is headed out with their friends on Friday night. And what goes through the mom's mind is all the things, you know, like, do you have a list of things, moms? There's all the things about how you live. Remember who you are, you know. Because I want to protect you. I know you're going out from under my wings. You're going out there. You've got to make choices. And I want you to remember how to live, how to really live. So there's the mom on Friday night, but there's also the mom on Saturday morning with the daughter or the son who regrets the choices they made the night before. And it's the mom who's there encouraging, warning, giving direction on Friday night, but it is also there in comfort on Saturday morning. Instead of on one hand is sin management, you don't measure up, or it doesn't matter what you do. Really, what we do is we live in tension between how to live and how you're loved. Friday night, here's how you live. Saturday morning, here's how you're loved. Because we all sin and fall short of the glory of God and God's love, even for those of us who are rejecting God for a time, the way that Jerusalem was. Jesus says, how do I feel about that? How I feel is I'm heartbroken. What I want to do is gather you in. But I want you to listen to the prophets. I want you to listen to those who speak God's truth into your life, because I want you to know how to live. But I also want you to know how you're loved. Rather than living on extremes, we live in tension between these two things. And we see it in our mothers. So as we try to envision a God who wants to give us direction for our lives, but also wants us to know that we're loved unconditionally, what would that look like? Think of the best mothers you know. That's what it looks like. As we've acknowledged before, we want to encourage and honor all the mothers among us. But we have so many different experiences with our mothers, and the mothers have different experiences of motherhood. There are different places in life. But we want to bless you. We want to honor you, and we want to encourage you. So I'm going to close out with a blessing for the mothers. All the mothers, we bless you. To those who gave birth this year with their first child, we celebrate you. To all the mothers who have lost a child, we mourn with you. To those who are in the trenches with little ones every day and wear the badge of food stains, we appreciate you. To those who experience loss through miscarriage, failed adoptions, or a child running away, we mourn with you. To those who walk the hard path of infertility, filled with tears and disappointment, we walk with you. Forgive us when we say foolish things. We don't mean to make this harder than it is. To those who are foster moms, mentor moms, and spiritual moms, we need you so much in our lives. To those who have warm and close relationships with your children, we celebrate with you. To those who have disappointment, heartache, and distance in your relationship with your children, we sit with you. To those who have lost their mothers, we grieve with you. To those who experienced abuse at the hands of your own mother, we acknowledge your experience. To those who are single and long to be married and mothering your own children, we mourn that life has not turned out the way you longed for it to be at this time. To those who step-parent, we walk with you on that complex path. To those who will have emptier nests in the upcoming year, we grieve with you and we rejoice with you. To those who have placed a child up for adoption, we commend you for your selflessness and remember how you hold that child in your heart for eternity. To those who are pregnant with new life, we anticipate with you. This Mother's Day, we walk with you. Mothering is not for the faint of heart. We have real warriors in our midst. We remember you, we honor you, and we celebrate you. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.